your work life, all of our work lives. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Jordan Peterson, you heard that name? He's the reigning self-help guru. The genesis of his best-selling book, now that's a word that's thrown around a lot, best-selling, but just in case it's true. The genesis of his best-selling book, 12 Rules for Life, was a Quora post in response to the question, what are the most valuable things that everyone should know? He listed 42 rules for life. 11 of them related to work, and evoked a response in me. 3 in disagreement, and 8 in substantial agreement. Here are the points that he made on Quora, unedited, and I'm going to give you my response. I'll start with the disagreement. It's more fun. Jordan Peterson wrote, nothing well done is insignificant. Huh? What about the opportunity cost? For example, people spend time primping a report, doing home repairs to unnecessary tolerances. Like, you know, I had a carpenter once who come to do the frame a door in, and all that needed to be done was to, like, to maybe an eighth of an inch. And this neurotic nut did it to, like, 1/32nd of an inch, and it cost me 3 times as much because he was charging me by the hour. So there are things, you know, people, that's unnecessary, doing home repairs to unnecessary tolerances. Not to mention people spending endless time perfecting their golf swing. Jordan Peterson, the right advice is to select the appropriate degree of care based on the opportunity cost. What could you otherwise be spending the time doing? For example, would spending an extra hour polishing that report be a better use of your time than what you otherwise could be doing? The second point I have significant disagreement with the guru Jordan Peterson. He writes, set your house in perfect order before you criticize the world. And my response? You could spend a lifetime trying to, quote, get your house in perfect order. And that's true whether it's literally your house or, I think he's, of course, referring to your personal behavior. I have had some of my most unsuccessful clients are those who feel they need to have their ducks in a row, perfect, before going out and looking for a job, meeting a romantic partner, whatever. The right advice, in my judgment, is to get started on your efforts to improve the world or meet the romantic partner or just land a job now rather than waiting until you're perfect or even close to it. Of course, work on yourself, but get your house in order sufficient only to the extent you need to start to make a difference externally or land a job or meet your romantic partner. The third area I disagree with Jordan Peterson around. And by the way, I will give out the phone number in a few minutes and invite you to call and tell me whether you agree with Jordan or me or whatever. His third point that I disagree with is dress like the person you want to be. I have a mixed reaction to that, actually. Yeah, dressing the part can be a self-fulfilling prophecy. You feel and act more like your aspired to self. And other people, look at shallow species that we are, tend to treat you as you look. That's why doctors wear white coats. They don't really need the white coat. But too many people spend too much time on their veneer. You can gift wrap a bad product and it's still a bad product. Most of our foci, focus, whatever, should be on improving our substance, not our packaging. Even if some people get seduced by my packaging or our packaging. Obviously, you want to aspire for quality, or aspire to quality, I guess is the right way to say it. Not aspire to height. Alas, if I'm really honest, the latter, aspiring for hype and marketing, is increasingly the American way. Marketing is among the fastest growing occupations. Yuck. Okay, enough of the negativity. Here is where I substantially agree with El Guru du jour, mixing my French with my Spanish. Jordan Peterson wrote, compare yourself to who you were yesterday, not to who someone else is today. That's right. Keeping up with the Joneses, materially or career-wise or avocationally, serves no purpose. Your benchmark should be, as Peterson says, you. It's like I play basketball. If I compared myself with Steph Curry, I'm dead. Even if I compare myself with somebody who's going to be better than me, I just, you know, I have a 4-inch vertical leap. I have the moves of, let's just say, a slow person. Jordan Peterson says, imagine who you could be and then aim single-mindedly at that. Well, that's probably pretty right on. Most people have to focus. Only pretty brilliant people can dabble and yet achieve significantly in multiple areas. Somebody once said, you know, I don't like people who are jackasses of all trade, masters of none. We've all heard, you know, jacks of all trade, but I like the jackasses of all trade. Anyway, Jordan Peterson says, don't let bullies get away with it. I agree. We like to believe that kindness is repaid. But in the real world, people are more likely to treat you fairly if you've invoked a measure of fear. That's true not just with bullies. If your boss or your romantic partner or your friend knows that you're not going to take crap, they're more likely to treat you well. For example, if you're negotiating salary, instead of following the standard advice to let the employer make the first offer, which is often a low ball, on average, not always, you would do better by firmly asserting that you need X dollars and give a number that's on the high side of fair. Not outrageous, it'll just blow you off. Jordan Peterson says, make at least one thing better every single place you go. It's good advice. I'd phrase it a little differently. I'd phrase it as, keep your antenna ever out for opportunities to make a difference. Jordan Peterson says, pursue what is meaningful, not what is expedient. That's obviously true, but what's meaningful? My definition of the life meaningfully led is, spend as much time as possible using your best abilities toward meeting an under-addressed need that, if addressed, would make a big difference. I want to say that again. What's meaningful? My definition of the life meaningfully led, spend as much time as possible using your best abilities toward meeting an under-addressed need that, if it were addressed, would make a big difference. For example, tutoring gifted kids in a blue-collar school because the parents aren't rich enough to afford a supplement that much, but they're not so poor that they're beset by such a huge constellation of problems that your efforts may not make that much difference. Jordan Peterson says, ask someone to do you a small favor so that he or she can ask you to do one in the future. I agree. But an additional reason to ask for a favor is that it makes the person more likely to want to do more favors for you. That's what's called commitment bias. The person wants to feel it was wise to have given you something. So he or she chooses to do more for you, which reinforces their feeling it was correct to have bestowed on you the first favor. Jordan Peterson says, notice that opportunity lurks where responsibility has been abdicated. Right. There really is rarely a reason to be bored. Look for opportunities to do the most you can, not the least you can get away with. That is one of the biggest differentiators among my clients who are successful and not. My unsuccessful clients are saying, how can I, they don't say it explicitly, but they feel internally, what's the least I can do to avoid getting fired so I can go home and vape, or I can go home and play video games, or whatever. My successful clients take pride in being productive and in working, and so they do the most they can. And, yeah, when someone in authority has shirked, that's a particularly good opportunity for you to make a bigger difference than you otherwise could have and make you less likely to be laid off. And finally, Jordan Peterson says, read something written by someone great. I agree. For example, I spend a lot of time in my car. I have to go up from Oakland to Napa to see my wife. I distract myself from the ever-worsening traffic by listening to an audiobook. I've always got one. My current focus is on biographies. And there's one I'd like to recommend to you. It's called Mencken, H.L. Mencken, the iconoclastic journalist from Baltimore. It's called Mencken, subtitled The American Iconoclast. And so now, I'd like to go to you, my dear listeners. If you have a reaction to my reactions to Jordan Peterson, or you would like a workover, if you've got a work-related problem, you're unemployed, or well-employed and unhappy, whether you're 16 or 76, Whether you're a clerk or a CEO, for-profit, non-profit, certainly the price is right. Zero, zippo, nada. I call them workovers. You can call in for one of those, and I won't pummel you, except maybe verbally. We'll see. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, NKALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. While I'm waiting for the calls to come in, I didn't just want to be reactant and, you know, present Jordan Peterson's ideas and me react to them. So I created my own six contrarian rules for life that are related to career that I thought I would share with you. Remember, these are contrarian. The first one is be judgmental. What? I believe that discernment is among Homo sapiens' most distinctive and valuable characteristics. It's core to what's enabled us to accomplish so much more than any other species. Yet today's egalitarian ethos has fogged us into devaluing judgment, devaluing discernment. All music is worthy. It's merely a matter of perspective. Garbage! Cal Newport's Deep Work, his great book, is simply better and more helpful than Tim Ferriss's The 4-Hour Work Week. I got five more, but I'd rather prioritize you, my dear listeners. So I'll give out the phone number one more time, then we're going to go to the phones. If you've got either a work-related problem that you would like my help with, or you want to react to my reactions to Jordan Peterson's rules for life, or my own contrarian rules for work, the phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hello? Are you there?
Hi there.
Hello?
Yes. Hello.
Hi. What gives me the honor of the call?
So I think you had an outstanding treatment of Jordan Peterson for those who may not have heard of him before, but I think one of the things that really stood out to me was his essential element of work on your house before looking towards others.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there may have been a minor, maybe either misinterpretation or misfocus. I think his claim is actually more theoretical than that. He's saying, obviously, you may have to look at outside and talk to others and influence them, but ultimately, the goal of life is to continuously work on yourself. And so when you work on your own house, it's a perpetual goal, and you will never really achieve the point at which you will be, verified to be the authority on others.
Of course, but he said before, it's like don't throw stones and, you know, unless your house, whatever that line from the Bible is. But he's saying this came from the fact that many people whose lives are in disarray and who are very flawed themselves go out and criticize people like Jordan Peterson or criticize others or criticize people. And he's saying, no, first get your own house in order, get yourself to be more together before. And that's ridiculous. I think as soon as we feel we can make a difference, whether it be in changing the world or getting a job or meeting a romantic partner or starting to save money, you can't get your house in order. Because like you say, it's going to take forever. So I think I've not mischaracterized Peterson's invocation. Anyway.
Interesting.
Okay, thanks a lot for the call. Do you have something else you wanted to say?
Perspective. No, I'm just saying that's an interesting perspective, and I haven't thought of it from that angle, but I totally understand what you're saying. I just have a different angle, and I think we can all take value from what he has to say.
Absolutely, and I really appreciate your call. Thanks a lot for calling. Work with Marty Nemko.
Yeah. Thank you.
Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Marty. I've called in twice now for work-related issues or, I guess, advice that I've had. And that was, over the past 3 years. And they've both been very helpful calls. I'm actually in a very good job right now, high-paying job that I actually really like.
Good. You can send me a royalty check.
So I'm actually calling because my partner's thinking about switching careers, had a job offer, and I wanted to get some advice from you because he asked me for some advice, and you have some good things to say.
Okay.
So he currently works as a warehouse manager at a catering company, and he applied for a job at UPS.
Mm-hmm.
He eventually wants to be a driver, but as he found out, That's not something that you can start out doing with UPS. You have to start in the warehouse, and then over about a year or so, you can move up to be a driver. That's where, you know, more of the career money is made. And currently his job is that he's doing at the catering is Monday through Friday, and he wants to stick to that schedule because I'm Monday through Friday, and it just works out better for his schedule.
Sure.
But they offered him a Tuesday through Saturday position, and they won't let him go to Monday through Friday because that's for a more senior person, and most of them choose Monday through Friday. So he's kind of in this debate where he wants to work for UPS long-term, and the Tuesday through Saturday would only be relatively short-term, maybe six months to a year, but still that's a lot. And my thought is that he could also be looking for jobs as another warehouse manager at a bigger company that would pay him a little bit more, maybe has more responsibility. So that was my advice, but I wanted to see what you thought.
I agree with you. I think that they are, you know, not always are corporations forced into lockstep. So what I would do, and it's easier for me to say because I have no downside risk, I would be saying to I would not take that job. That feel because that 6 months to a year when they were trying to recruit you could turn into 1 to 2 years. And then first to be able to become a manager or a driver, and it sounds like the pay is crap because as you were implying. What I would do is I would probably give them a kind ultimatum. I'd say, you know, I'm a manager now. I'm a warehouse manager. And I would like to work for UPS, but not at such a dramatic both reducing in pay, lousy schedule, and being a worker, being a warehouse. And it feels like an awfully long slog for something that isn't that great. And so given who I am and given my background, you've either got to offer me either a driver job now, even if the stand, because in every company, there is always a certain percentage of people who do not follow the standard path and do leapfrog. So I would have the guts to say, I'm willing to I believe I deserve to be a driver now because look at my people skills, look at my whatever, to the extent to which it's true. I have managerial skills and I have excellent references to prove it. So I should either start out as a warehouse manager or as a driver and with a regular schedule. If you can't do that, I really appreciate your interest, but thanks very much. There is a good enough chance that they will say yes, that it's worth the risk. It's not like he's going to be homeless. He's got a job. So I would be inclined, and if he gets it, fantastic, and if not, there'll be a certain amount of anger and disappointment in having lost that gambit, which will fuel him, hopefully, to go to DHL and the Postal Service and FedEx and the local delivery services on site and Amazon that's got its own delivery operations, and that somebody will offer him, because it sounds like they're giving him a crappy deal. It's not like UPS is getting to work for Google or Apple, you know, or NBC Sports. It's a delivery company with a brown truck. So, and a big ugly warehouse where you're just, you know, you're a grunt. So I think I would be bolder in the situation. And so I'm supporting your position. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially what I was thinking, too. I mean, I've done that kind of slog of a longer work week or a work week that wasn't fun just to ultimately get somewhere better. But I agree with you. I think he's at a point now where he can get a better job right away. He doesn't have to go through that slog because he has the skills. I mean, ultimately up to him, but yeah, that's what I was going to say to him as well. So I'll mention that as advice, and maybe I'll call you back and let you know how it goes.
I really like that. I appreciate it. I wish you the best of luck. My fingers are crossed.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Welcome to Marty Nemco. Okay, take care.
Bye.
Okay, I'll give out the phone number again. Whatever the work problem, I mean, this guy is a warehouseman. You know, I also have had people call in who are, seven-figure earning CEOs and nonprofit executives making lots of money, too. So whatever your station in life, forgive the radio pun, the phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco for a workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And while before I went to the phones, I was sharing, after having shared my reactions to Jordan Peterson's 11 career-related rules for life, I was offering my own contrarian ones. And I'm going to offer some. I offered one, here are some more. Be elitist. What? This is actually a corollary of the previous one. Spend your time and your money on the people not who have the greatest deficit, but those with the greatest potential to profit. Every battlefield medic knows that to save the most lives, you have to use your limited resources where they're likely to make the biggest difference. So fight to work with people you respect. Hold out for relationships with superior people. Yes, superior. People who are going to bring out the best in you, who are not sitting around doing nothing and, yes, being high, getting high all day. Donate your money to causes that have proven helpful to those with unusual potential to improve the world. My next of my six I have many standard beliefs, but that would bore you, and, you know, I'm telling you what you already know. These are not obvious contrarian positions that I deeply believe. And I'm not just making them to make them. I believe them deeply, but they're not part of the mainstream. Work hard. Mediocre people tell us to not work hard, but work smart. Of course, try to work smart. But except if you were a fool to begin with, working smarter may only add trivially to your productivity. You'll likely produce far more value by adding an extra hour or three to your actual work time. Playing on Facebook during the workday doesn't count. And productivity matters a lot more than does, quote, the pursuit of happiness. I could be happy eating, watching Netflix, having sex all day. But my life would have been much less worthy than if I were working most of the time on something that I'm good at and that's important, frankly, like this radio show. Or I've invited a client I had today sitting here working with a client. I see clients in the evening as well as during the day because it feels like, as the Buddhists would say, right livelihood. Work hard, not just smart. I have more, but I'll give out the phone number and go to the phones. If you've got a work-related problem, would you like me to try to help you? The phone number here, Work with Marty Nenko, for a workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hi, Marty. My name is Christine.
Hi, Christine.
Hi. So, my work-related problem has to do with ordinances in the city. I am a certified massage therapist and structural integrator. I do body work that helps people, like post-op, stroke patients, car accidents. And I look at the cause of issues rather than just working on symptoms. I really look at the structure and realigning the body. So the city has a lot of zoning and has been a lot of ordinances against massage therapy. I understand why. They're trying to fight against human trafficking. But it's made it really difficult to start a practice. And to be a sole proprietor when, you know, you have to jump through all these hoops with paying high fees, getting background checks when I already do that with the state. It's frustrating. I've had to give up my practice because my building, a medical building, is not zoned for massage therapy, even though I practice a pretty advanced form with 2,000 hours of training. So, you know, I don't know what to do. I mean, it's so hard to find a place here that will accept that kind of work. And I feel like massage therapy has so many, it's such a broad range. There's spa work, you know, there's more deep tissue. And then there's stuff like myofascial release or neuromuscular therapy, both neuromuscular therapy, both orthopedic styles, and which is what I practice. And, you know, what do I do? Do I fight? Do I hide? I mean, I don't want to hide. It's just, I'm frustrated.
Got it. Listen, you know, I rarely say you can't fight City Hall, but you can't. Government, you can't. The laws are more stringent in San Francisco. There's more regulation than any place else in the country, certainly. I don't know about Sweden, but here, certainly. If you sound like you're very serious about your, it's almost pretty medically related massage.
Yeah.
I'm wondering whether you have to do a reverse commute and get out of San Francisco. There are other places, you know, you said you've met state requirements. So I would think that either working in an assisted living facility, rehab facility of some sort, not so much a spa because you've got this medical specialty.
Yeah, I don't do spa work. I've been in sports med, all of that, yeah.
Got it. So finding, you know, the good news would be with the traffic is just nightmarish to try to get into the city. but perhaps getting out, look in, you know, the East Bay or the Peninsula or Marin or further out, if depending upon, you know, or depending upon whether you're ready to move. I mean, the cost of living is crazy here. It's impossible in San Francisco. So I don't think you can beat the city. You know, they'll shut you down and maybe take away your license. I think you can't fight the government. They are the 5,000-pound gorilla.
Right.
I think you need to, but I don't think, I'm not going to ask you to change careers either, because it sounds like you really like what you do and you're really expert at it, and there's a real need. So I would just say expand your geography to locales where the bureaucracy is not as choking, not as strangling. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess it's because I feel this very strong, deep, passionate need to stand up for my rights, and for my profession. So I've just watched it get knocked down further and further and further. Starting at 1,000 hours being, you know, what you need for license. Now it's 100 hours in the city of San Francisco, and for an advanced practitioner, it's 200 hours, which is ridiculous. I mean, we wonder why sex workers, you know, they have a problem with sex workers. And I'm like, I'm confused. And, you know, I've talked to legislators, I've talked to both zoning and health department, and their hands are kind of tied. I'm ready to go to, you know, I've been invited to speak in Sacramento over this?
Christine, I would say no. You know, the wise person knows when to fight and when not to. Or as country western singer Kenny Rogers said, you got to know when to hold them, and you know, got to know when to fold them, and you got to know when to walk away. And yeah. I think what I'm hearing, I don't think that you're going to topple the city and county of San Francisco with all its lawyers and legislators. I think unless you really want to make your life sacrifice to this, if that's what you want to make your life's work, being a lobbyist, fine. But you described yourself more as a frustrated, you used the word twice, frustrated massage therapist. So if you're my daughter or my sister, I tell you, find a place where you can do your work and not be fighting this megalith called government. Maybe I'm just being too realistic, but that's my take on it.
Well, yeah, my sister, both of them are attorneys, and they're like, you got to fight smart.
Right.
So, yeah, so I basically had to close my practice.
Reopen it somewhere else. You know, as they say, one door closes, another door opens.
I know. It's just I took 3 years to build this practice, and I'm really starting to, like, I start to hit my stride, and it just feels awful feeling like a criminal.
I got it. But you, I can only, you know, it would be very easy for me to just be nicey-nicey and say, you're right, poor baby, go fight him, whatever. But I think that would be a short-term feel-good and a long-term feel-bad. I think in the arc of your life, you will feel better about saying that damn city of San Francisco, screw them. I'm going to go where I'm wanted. And there are human beings waiting for Christine to go and help them that are not getting served because you're busy fighting a tidal wave with a thimble.
Right.
Anyway,
that's
as good as I got.
Okay.
Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemco. Okay, phone number again, if you've got a work-related problem of any sort, phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I was in the middle of sharing my contrarian rules for career that are to supplement Jordan Peterson's, most of which I agreed with. And the next one is, recreation is overrated. If you're doing work you're good at, you'll probably derive nearly as much pleasure doing it as when you're watching TV or playing sports, whatever. But what about those work-life balance advocates? They're always warning about your health. Well, if you were hooked up to a stress meter, you'd probably be as relaxed doing that work as when recreating. Right now, I'm on the radio. I imagine if somebody had a stress meter hooked up to me, I am as relaxed as if I was playing with my PS4. Probably more relaxed because the PS4 gets you pumped up. Don't know what PS4, it's a PlayStation, the latest PlayStation, which I just learned is not backward compatible. The pig Sony is, but I digress. Anyway, my next rule of for contrarian rule for career is accept that you're at least half genetic. Again, these are my contrarian rules. I got many less, you know, many traditional beliefs about work or whatever, but these are deliberately because they're, I want them to be fresh and not obvious and not what you're normally going to hear. They're different. So accept that you're at least half, not all, but at least half genetic. If you're a phlegmatic person, you're laid back, you're laconic, choose your word, your adjective, it's not a good use of your time to try to make yourself bubbly. If you're intellectually lackluster, spending time on, quote, brain-building activities, which, by the way, have been demonstrated not to work, is likely to be a poor use of your time, let alone doing power poses, which Amy Cuddy was this big star, and it's been totally debunked. Many people thought, oh, it's so cool. All I got to do is stand in a power pose, and I'm going to be smarter, more confident. It's been really debunked. Anyway, if you're hot-tempered, all the techniques in the world are unlikely to keep you from going from 0 to 60 in 2 seconds. After just moderate, I don't say no effort, but after just moderate effort to improve on some weaknesses, it's usually, nothing is always, but it's usually better to accept that negative thing about yourself and therefore make all efforts to put yourself in situations and with people that are unlikely, in this case, to make you explode. Right? I'm not a laid-back guy. I work at home, so I'm not in traffic all the time. I work one-on-one in a quiet environment where I have control over the situation. I try to be playful and upbeat, which also keeps me calm. So, but I'm not going to end up ever being, having the potential to have a temper. It's in my DNA. But I'm rarely, if you were to, you know, the number of times, I probably lose my temper twice a year now because I've structured my life to minimize it. But I haven't tried to change it. I haven't gone to anger management classes. I've read all the anger management. I accept some basic things about myself and structure my life based on that acceptance so that the weakness doesn't hurt me. And the final of my 6 contrarian rules for career is something that I've said often on this show, but it's, if I had to create 6 of these contrarian rules, this certainly belongs among them. And that is, never look back. Always take the next step forward. Classical psychotherapists insist that we have to pore over our malaise's childhood roots. But the fact is, we quickly derive lessons from our past, maybe even without thinking about it, very quickly. Certainly, continuing to look back is more likely to mire you in the past than to help you move forward. Take the next step forward already. I've had so many clients who've had years of therapy who say they've developed insight into themselves, but their life is no better. Act. Take steps forward. Not huge risk steps, but baby steps forward, not looking back to what your mother did to you, your father did to you, that jerk boss who fired you unfairly, the spouse who took you to the cleaners, whatever. Phone number again, if anybody would like some career-related help, this is a good time to call. Line's available. 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. There is a national touring exhibit called Working in America, and I've been honored. They've invited me to give a talk as part of that national tour. And I'll be giving a talk at the Oakland Library at 5205 Telegraph Avenue in Oakland, a week from this Saturday at 2:15 p.m. But I thought I would give all of you, for those of you who may not be showing up, and I may change it by then, but I thought I'd give you all a kind of a brief summary of what I'm planning to say. And my talk is going to be it's going to be my very best career ideas. Because, you know, they're going to have one shot at me. I figure I might as well give them whatever the best I got. And I think if I'm going to give the best I got to them, I might as well give them to you. So what I'm planning to do is, after the library director's probably flowery introduction of me, I'm going to bring people back down to earth about me by describing a few of my manifold failures. Like, I got fired from my first job at age 12. My job was to record bills that came in as paid. I was so eager to show I was good, I rushed, and I made mistakes. Too many mistakes. I got fired. In my first job managing people, I had no training, and so as a boss, you're going to laugh at me, I was 22 at the time, I thought I was supposed to boss people around. I was fired. And one more example. When I was a professor, I was chatting. We were walking this UC Davis. I'm walking around the campus. And I'm chatting with the department chair, and I said, I like New Yorkers because they're straight shooters. Later, I found out I really offended him. Why? He's a tactful Midwesterner. And it may be coincidence, but I was not rehired. So after I reveal those honest truths about myself, I made a list of some things that I truly believe are some of my best ideas regarding career. And the first is, especially in the world in which the next generation is going to inherit, I believe the for-profit sector is bad unless you're a superstar, because so many jobs are going to be part-time, temped, automated, and offshored. And so you're going to be treated like crap, I'm afraid, with the sword of Damocles hanging over your head that's just going to automate your job or send it to India. Nonprofits pay crap. They expect you to believe in the cause and therefore work 12 hours a day for the cause. But the cause doesn't enable you to afford more than ramen or cat food. So, fine, make your money and donate to charity, your volunteer time to charity. But government... Because there's all these tax dollars. There isn't quite as much accountability to the bottom line, and they can always print more money or raise taxes, and they do. Government can afford to pay well, and recent studies find that for the same work, federal jobs pay more than the private sector equivalents. And you get great job security. My daughter works for the government. Lots of holidays, lots of vacation days, regular hours. She doesn't have to work at 9 p.m. So unless you're really some people just can't stomach government because it tends to be bureaucratic and slow. But if you believe a lot of people believe in that government does good work even if it is slow, you can probably, your best shot would be to take the time, and it does take time, to try to get a good government job, especially federal. That tends to be the best paying. But the applications are long, and many people apply to government, and the process can take months, maybe even a year. So you have to be patient. But once you're in the system, you usually have an edge in getting future jobs, and relatively few government employees get fired, certainly compared to or laid off or terminated. Government does not shrink. Government grows. Some would say metastasize. It's smart money. And don't overgeneralize about all government. Yes, some agencies are slow and turgid. Others are nimble and idealistic and great. So don't just dismiss government because you think it's all turgid. Go and apply, and then in the interview process, ask good questions to get a feel for what that particular work group is like, not just the agency. So I'm going to share that with the audience attending my Working in America talk at the Oakland Library. I'll give out the phone number again. If you have a work-related problem, would like some help with it, you're unemployed and looking to figure out what you want to be when you grow up, even if you're already supposed to be grown up, or you know what you'd like but you can't seem to land a job, or you're on the job and you're still unhappy, or you're self-employed. I play Shark Tank here. You can share your idea with me or your current business, and I'll do my best to tell you if I would invest or not. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Another tip that I'm going to be offering my audience at the Working in America talk at the Oakland Library is, and this is aimed at many of the people who are going to be coming, I'm told, are going to be entry-level workers. Many of them would be wise to walk in. It is very helpful to, especially for an entry-level job, for people to see you. I love telling the story of imagine that you were at home and asleep. It's 3 a.m. and you get a phone call all of a sudden. And the phone call says, there is this new infant baby in a cradle, and I need somebody to take care of it for a while, and maybe I'll come back, or maybe just turn in the police or whatever. Most people would not take the baby. But if the doorbell rang and you open the door and there is this infant in a cradle, most people would take it in. That metaphor is apt in terms of entry-level job seekers. by walking into a workplace, you are more, you are a human being. You're not just bits and bytes, you know, a computer screen or a disembodied voice. You have a great chance of getting hired for entry-level job. My favorite example of this is I've done a lot of TV, and when I was in the CNN bureau in San Francisco, you have to wait for quite a while. You're sitting, you're mic'd up, you're ready to go, but you know your spot is not pre-assigned. Some other segment could come first or whatever. So you're sitting there and you're talking with a cameraman, and so I asked him how he got the job as CNN cameraman. He said he simply walked in. And this is an office building, 50 California Street. He simply walked in. He says, I have camera experience, and they happen to need somebody. I don't know if it was just then or a month later or whatever, but he walked in, and if he had simply gone on the website and waited for a job to come available, he would just be this another applicant. And so for many entry-level jobs, walking in can be the wisest thing. But you just can't walk into one place or two places because the odds of anybody needing you are trivially low. You've got to say, okay, I'm going to walk into 10 places today, and then I'm going to take myself out this morning, and I'm going to take myself out to lunch afterwards, or five, because then the numbers are in your favor. Next tip I'd like to give. The standard advice is that everyone should network. Networking is so important. It's not correct. It's a more nuanced piece of information than that. Some people are much better at networking. They're either very good looking, or they have the gift of gab, or they just have this something that they exude that makes people like them. Other people can network until the cows come home and it gets them nothing. So the important thing for whether you're a job seeker or simply as part of your job or, you know, when you're on the job, you still want to meet people and talk to people. If your track record says that you have not been successful, and in fact it's been painful for you, you have to force yourself, you're an introvert, who forces yourself to go to these networking, to these conferences, and these meetings, to the wine and cheese, meets and greets, and whatever, and all you end up doing is trudging back to your car, miserable afterwards, feeling like a loser, then only a foolish career advisor would tell you to network more. You gotta, as my mother used to say, dance with the one that brung you, meaning whatever has brought you the most success in the past, if it's writing, if it's your close friends, if it's networking, if it's answering ads eloquently, dance with the one that brung you. It's much more likely to work well than just following the standard exhortation, network, network, network. Phone number again, if you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, I'm here to help. Price is certainly right. You're listening to KALW and work with Marty Nemko. I try to offer career advice. I've been doing it for 28 and a half years now on this station, and still love doing it and happy to help you and use that 28 and a half years of experience to help you in your call. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. The next tip I plan to give in my talk to in the Working America talk at the Oakland Library, which again is a week from Saturday, 2:15 p.m. at 5205 Telegraph Avenue in Oakland. I'll be sharing my best career tips, and I'm sharing some of those with you now. I'm trying to recognize that many of you are not going to be coming. So I will offer some more of those tips now, but I think let's go to the phones right away. I want to prioritize you, my dear listeners. So welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It is your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hello? Are you there? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hi. Hi, can you hear me? Yeah, can you hear me?
I think I can hear you. You called me by a different name, but that's fine.
I didn't call you by any
my
name.
My question...
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll just say, my name is Matt.
Okay.
I am a 53-year-old man with an MBA, and I've spent a career in management consulting, and then I made a transition into renewable energies. I was very successful at the time, and then through divorce and a number of financial setbacks, not to mention a layoff, I've ended up now unemployed for more than 2 years. I searched ad nauseum, sending out resumes, trying to follow the protocol, and at this point I'm trying to sort of retreat. I like the point that you just made a second ago. I just tuned into your program about, what was it, something about dance with the one
that brung
you or something. Yeah, and I'm on board with that. I'm trying to sort of focus back on my core skills and sort of reposition myself as more of an independent rather than trying to look for a job per se, but rather try to create work. But I just dialed in, and it's so topical, the subject you're talking about. I'd just like your opinion on somebody who's been out of employment that's getting up in his years, and what your thoughts are on trying to re-enter the job market.
First thing, really important, you give off your tone of voice gives off bitterness and anger. I hear it in your voice. And you know what? If I'm hearing it and you're talking to your friend here, somebody who's your ally, I would wonder whether somewhere along the line in your networking or in your interviews, you're coming off as bitter. And that's a kiss of death, dude. In a nicer world, in an ideal world, we would have sympathy for somebody who's been beaten down by divorce, who's older, who's been out of work for 2 years. But if I'm being straight with you, we're not that nice. And so they're going to say, you know what? This guy's a problem waiting to happen. And if we end up having to get rid of him, he's over 50. He's going to file an age discrimination lawsuit, and we're going to be in deep doo-doo. So you have to, as they say, fake it till you make it. You have to think of yourself when you were at your peak with that MBA and you were in renewable energy and you were flying high and everything was good. You have to invoke that self when you are reaching out to people. I do like the idea that when you say your personality is not just to play this typical game and go through. Right, I want you to create work for you. So let us take a few minutes now to see if we can create a narrow laser focus for your efforts to create work. If there was a god or a goddess who's looking down upon you, Matt, and saying, this is what you really are a rock star at or could quickly become a rock star at, what would that be?
Pitching complicated projects that have never been done before.
Pitching them, you said?
Yes.
Pitching them, okay, good.
Proposing.
Right.
Creating visions for complicated jobs. Ultimately, it's about systems integration that I've been doing for years. But very complicated projects, sort of pioneering and demonstrating new technologies. That's a lot of what I've done in the years past.
Would they be in writing or verbally or both?
Ultimately both, but a lot of writing. I've spent years writing extensive documentation, proposals, contracts.
Which of the following feels more correct? Writing proposals for small startups that are trying to get angel investors, prospectuses, doing technical writing for companies, or writing grant proposals for a nonprofit in the renewable energy space. Which of those feels most closely aligned with your abilities?
First one, because that's really actually the environment I've worked in for the last 10 years. Not just startups, but, you know, pre-commercialization and early commercialization efforts in solar energy in particular, but also energy storage.
And I agree with you, probably at 53 with a 2-year unemployment thing, if you go and just apply for a job, that no matter how you massage your resume, either pre-getting selected for the interview or during the interview, they're going to find that 2-year gap and they're going to make them nervous. So you need to do more trying to get the job through the back door. Knowing your personality as you do, how could you at least, it may not be a full-time benefited job, how could you get to do a project for somebody where you're writing this kind of a prospectus? Let's say I put a gun to your head, and I said, you have to, in the next week, do whatever it takes to get one such project. Who would you call? Who would you write to? Where would you go? What would you do, man?
I would take some of the prospective customers, I'm calling them customers now, coincidentally,
right,
ironically, because actually they're prospective employers.
Right.
But rather than necessarily trying to come in the front door, as you're just saying, I've been musing on this very idea of creating a pitch deck. In other words, trying to sell them some of my thinking.
Great.
Here's kind of where I see the market going.
Great.
Here's some of the technologies that I see as you're doing. Here's some things that I know how to do. And did you know that I can help you connect the dots and bring some money in if in the case of a startup?
Great. Because right now, I'm guessing there's a fair degree of despondency to accompany the anger. So if I said your assignment for the next day or five, whatever it takes you, is to create that pitch deck for yourself. But keeping in mind not just you and your strengths, but picture your target audience and create that pitch deck. And the pitch deck should be a three-minuter. Nobody's got time for, even if somebody they know you, to watch 10 minutes worth. I want a three-minute pitch deck that is going to knock socks off of your target audience, which will give new hope, replace your bitterness with hope. What's your reaction to that?
That sounds spot on. And, you know, intuitively, I guess I've felt that, but I haven't had the chutzpah to push it over the edge. But, you know, this is a very timely call. I'm down here waiting for my daughter who's about to jump in the car, so I'm going to have to go. But
great. Dude, you got to call me back next week, and you let me know whether you did or not. If not, I'll break your face if you don't call me or if you didn't do it. Because I think
you host this program weekly at this hour.
Yep, for 28 and a half years. So you, God forbid, unless something terrible happens, I'll see you next week.
A fortuitous occasion to have met your acquaintance. Thank you, and I'll dial in next week. I'll put it on my calendar.
Excellent. All right, good. Let's take one more call. Let's welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
How are you doing, Marty? So I had a couple. Well, first of all, you used to come on Sunday, right? Because
yes.
I remember calling you once on
They've
Sunday
moved me or... to a better time. I am honored. You know, there are many more people who are interested in work on Thursday at 7 o'clock. They're still in their cars in the traffic than on Sunday morning right. When the last thing they want to think about is their work. They'd rather think about their mimosas.
Exactly. Great. So let me ask you, first, I had a couple questions on what you said. I mean, you're always so insightful.
Thank you.
This is on government, so this is not for me looking for work, but just generally you said your daughter works
mm-hmm.
government.
Yep.
There's a couple, well, I don't know what level, but, you know, a lot of people...
She's a U.S. attorney. She's a U.S. attorney in the Department of Justice in Washington, D.C.
Oh, all right. So, yeah, there you go. So a lot of people, number one, would not want to apply to the federal government, given our government right now. And number two, they're not hiring that much, as far as I understand. So did you sort of mean to look for... you know, whatever level fits people, like say it's state or county, or were you talking generally?
I'm talking generally for the following reason. Let us not be short-sighted. Let us remember that I think, and it's not just me, but there are, you know, where gambling is legalized worldwide, there are political betting all about, you know, how likely is Trump going to get reelected? How likely is he to complete his term? The odds are damn good that he will... A, be hamstrung for the rest of his term. B, resign. C, you know, no more than complete his office. And more importantly, in terms of what the values you're implying, the Democrats are very likely to win both sets, both houses, and in which case he will really be rendered a marionette in chains. So
yes.
Do not. I remember, I'll never forget, the Nation, right after he's elected, says, all of our mission should be to throw sand into every Trump initiative, and they've done that. So
mm-hmm.
I believe that you should not make your career decisions based on a very transient, likely set of events. And I believe that at all levels of government, but especially federal, because the federal has the most bandwidth. California is in, notwithstanding Silicon Valley's making a lot of money, there is, you know, I've been reading a lot of statistics about how much is spent on social programs, how we are a very generous state in terms of illegal immigration, et cetera. And so I do not believe the state government will grow, notwithstanding the fact that we have a clearly all Democratic state legislature. So
mm-hmm.
I think all of them, I think federal, state, local, you know, the real focus should be on where you could make the biggest contribution. I'd be looking at all of them. County, states. There's another little niche I love, which is called the interstices. Forgive the fancy word. Interstices are little spaces. There are all of
yeah.
these agencies that are between federal, state, and government. Regional boards, water boards, transportation boards, utility boards, public utilities commission, parks, all these different under-the-radar groups that all have staffs. So I'm talking about government fully brought. Remember, government is the largest employer in America. There is at all of those levels. So I would, if the idea of government employment both ideologically suits you and you like the security that generally accrues through government, I would certainly not, because of Donald Trump, not apply for government jobs.
Okay, great. So I, if you have a minute, I can tell you sort of the thing I work in, which is quite different.
Please.
It's actually my part-time work. So, you know, you said, would you, you know, something that you might fund in Shark Tank. So we actually used to look for funding. So it's a medical internet startup, mm-hmm. and we were looking to grow really fast, which we didn't. So we've switched to a model of you pay for premium services. So I guess I'll just get your... So it, what we do, it's kind of an intermediary between a practice and an EHR. So an EHR is electronic health records. Mm-hmm. So... There are services that do intake, but we found that practices don't care that much about intake.
Right.
But what they do care is things called encounter notes and filling those out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their medical assistants, it's really a pain for them.
For those listeners who don't know what that means, is every time doctors are paid based on each encounter, and also nurses and, you know, medical assistants or whatever. And so somebody's got to document using the right codes in order to get maximum reimbursement for the healthcare provider. Is that a fair statement?
That's about right, yeah. So what we're doing is we're just automating a lot of that. Mm-hmm. We have the patient do the intake, and then the encounter notes, we sort of we upload them immediately to the EHR, and they don't have to... Well, we take a lot of the information from the electronic intake instead of you know, somebody having to type it in. And this is for smaller practices that
right.
don't do this as automatically. They might have been doing it on paper. So we right. think we're going to find a niche here, and we're going to find at least some places, small to mid-sized practices that do want to pay for that. The intake we're going to do for free because we've been doing that.
You have
that
to be very brief now because I'm looking at the clock. We're almost out of time.
Okay.
What's your question?
Just, do you think there's a space for a company like
the
that?
The right answer is market test. I would identify two or three different niches that you believe are the highest potential, and I would see if I could get feedback on your idea. I would have screenshots or whatever and send your front people in to talk with the office manager or the physician or whatever, with a reasonable sample size of potentially 10 to, you know, maybe 10 in each niche. And that's going to give you the best answer. Intuitively, it makes a certain amount of sense because it is a pain in the butt. And the extent to which it's automated, but it has to work. You know, are they going to get screwed? Or are they going to be overcharging? You know, it could be pretty complicated to automate all that. There's a lot of nuance involved. So really, it hinges on two things. The quality, really, of the inferences made by your software, as well as what the market demands. And now I have to say thank you, because the show is over.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, take care. And that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr. I want to thank my guests here who have been sitting and watching this whole thing, Pete, my client, and Carolyn's mom, and Crystal, the girlfriend. Thank you. Was I not supposed to do that? Oh, it's okay. All right. Good. All right. And of course, thank you all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Thursday at 7. You can call in for Workover Plus. I'll talk with retired Superior Court Judge Raymond Guadagni about what it's really like to be a lawyer. Until next Thursday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.